Welcome to Who Are You, a CSI podcast. I'm Raven, and I've seen CSI thrown through around 3 to 4 times.
And I'm Nick. These are my first time experiencing these episodes.
And today we are reviewing Season 4, Episode 15, Early Rollout, original air date February 19, 2004. Director is Dwayne Clark. Writers are Anthony E. Zeiker, Carol Mendelson, and Elizabeth Devine. I was going to say Devine. Divine, I'm fairly sure is how you would pronounce that. Could be Devine.
Adam Devine?
I'm just saying I know someone that has this last name and it's spelled the same exact way and it is Divine.
D-E-V-I-N-E.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think some people go one way, some people go the other.
So
the tomato situation.
Yeah, so who knows? I'm not sure how Elizabeth pronounces it, but we begin today's episode with shots of the Vegas Strip before we head to the burbs and a gated community. So before we're there, Nick, what is our Vegas score for today's episode?
Yeah, we have a late come behind victory. I don't know if I'd say victory, but
yeah,
right. Showing
a surge episode,
where we were like two scenes through the first half plus of this episode, and then somehow we ended at 39.
Oh wow!
I write down when they happen now.
Okay,
so on a rewatch, if I missed one, I can capture it.
Yeah, you can capture it.
25 minutes, 32 minutes, 37 minutes, 39 minutes, and 42 minutes.
Okay.
We had a scene. Each scene was at least 4 seconds long.
Oh, wow.
Or 5 seconds long, each intercut. Okay. So the back half of the show had over 30 seconds of Vegas scenes.
Yeah. Okay.
So they all kept you locked in. Really, the opening credits is one scene.
Three seconds. It's like a very, we see the Vegas Strip for like a moment and then we're over to the burbs.
There's the second scene is like three different scenes. Because it cut like three shots of the same casino.
Yeah.
But, and so like for a second, it seemed like it was going well. And then there's just this dry spell for 20 minutes.
It's just like, nope.
And then
forget that we're in Vegas.
And then they kept going back to it. I was like halfway through, I was like, this is getting pretty respectable. Oh, this is really good. I was like, I mean, in the new scoring, anything over 30 to me is very Vegas-y.
That's fair. So,
all right. Good score.
So we came back from behind on this one. So we're in this gated community. We see a husband and a wife getting ready to leave the house. The wife goes to pull out the car before she's able to really do so. They are both attacked quite viciously. We then have Catherine and Grissom on scene.
I was going to say, there's a weird, two interesting things in this opening scene.
Yes.
One, on rewatch, there are some stuff in the foreground they put into place that pertains to where they're going. So you're kind of like, oh, you're ready to leave. Like, we're going to go somewhere together.
Yes.
Which is important to the storyline. Well, that'll get revealed later. And I was pleasantly surprised in my rewatch to realize, oh, like, there's a little something here for that.
Yeah, to like that they're not like just going about their day. Like,
the second thing is, where is that the killing of the husband?
Yes.
In the first scene does not match to the plot. Later on, they show him being killed in a later reenactment in a different location. And I feel
is what we see here, not when he's killed, but when he's stunned.
So that's the thing.
Because,
or I guess what I'm thinking, remember, is they stunned him.
Spoiler alert. We learn that she dies first.
Yes. So they stun him. I guess, we're about to cut to them being dead.
Yeah.
But in this whole opening scene, it looked like his bloody body was dragged. There's a trail of blood down the walkway. Maybe that's more of what I'm thinking of. As they show him like as if he was killed up top and dragged down.
He was.
But then later on, they show him as being killed at the bottom of the driveway.
No, I don't think they do.
In the final reenactment, because for line of sight purposes.
Well, no. But they drag his... Spoiler alert for like the very end of this episode, listeners.
Super spoiler.
Watch the episode now because like we already ruined it for you. Well, not really. Well, we have quite a bit to get through still. But no. They kill him. The dragging is so that they can lift him up and show the person that he is dead, and then they drop him back down. But he's already dead. But
maybe I'm confused. I thought they were stunning him, dragging him to the location where they could show him being.
No. No. They stunned him. Again, spoiler alerts. Watch the episode before listening to this.
Our lovely
listeners. They stun him so that he is forced to watch his wife die.
Oh.
And then he is killed, and then he is dragged.
Oh, I don't think I got that at all. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, yeah. So
it's very, despite spending spoiler the entire episode on this one case.
One case. This is a one cased episode.
Apparently they don't do the best job at explaining it. But
also caveat, I've been really wishy-washy about recording because life has just been hectic for me recently. And so Nick did his watch through a week ago.
Yes.
And so he is recalling
his second
this episode, his second watch through a week ago. So yeah, he is recalling from memory a week ago. So
although I wrote that down, so I can't.
I'm trying to give you
a second watch through. I was like, this, that's why I'm struggling to remember the details. But I wrote down like, wait, that's not where they said they killed him later.
Yeah, so we learn in like one of the last scenes that the person responsible for their murders really, really wanted to hurt Mike Trent. And one of the ways that he really, really hurt him was to force him to watch his wife being murdered before he was murdered. Yeah.
For some reason, I thought he wanted to see him killed. I think that's maybe where I got confused.
Yeah.
So Maya was making the extrapolation that they dragged him downhill to the end of the driveway to show me. So let's just get back into the,
we'll get back
the
into it. Okay. Theme,
and then we'll get our listeners caught up and we can talk about it at the end.
Yeah. So we're with Catherine and Grissom. They're on scene. This is an early call out. So we get the name of the episode real early in this episode,
which is, I think interesting to think about, like their 8 a.m. is like, they go home and go to bed.
Yeah. Yeah. They're in bed. Like they're like technically off shift, or like generally speaking, they're off shift at this point.
Despite the fact that most of their scenes, all every single episode, take place during the daytime.
This is very true.
But still an overnight shift.
Very true. And Jim Ross is already there. We learn that the victims, Mike and Laurel Trent, owned Acid Drop, which is like one of the like happening clubs in Vegas. It appears that they have been shot execution style. And this is the first of many times that Grissom is like, why was the husband dragged?
Yeah.
Because he was dragged to a spot where it would be easier to spot him. And they were like, generally, if you're trying to like quietly kill people, you want to hide their bodies. Like, you don't want their bodies out in like general view of the public. So it's like very strange. We have this question. We go to credits. We come back to Catherine entering the home with Warwick. Catherine makes a lot of assumptions about Laurel Trent being a trophy wife with very little
evidence
or context. She's just like, obviously she's a trophy wife. And during this exchange, Warwick gets a call from Greg Sanders, who is at the wrong gate. So Warwick has to tell him to like drive, head back down the road, take a left. And then he'll be at the correct gate.
It's definitely using a TomTom and a MapQuest.
Very true. We then have Nick and Sarah and Jim Brass. They are talking about, you know, how clubs like hire celebrities to come by and like help.
Was it Little Kim and Ja Rule?
Something like that. And I was like, oh, this is so dated. I was like, it's dated in a way that I adore. But I was like, oh, man, this is so good.
Both of those artists are due for a TikTok comeback.
That's true.
Where one of their songs goes viral.
Yeah, on TikTok. We'll see. And during this exchange, Sarah's using some cough drops. Jim Brass immediately suspicious of this. We'll find out why later. But before then, we're back with Grissom. He's examining their car.
Asks for one.
Yes, and she says, this is the only one I have.
Yeah. Which comes up again later. But also, Nick, why do you need a cough drop? You're not coughing.
I know.
You're not sick the entire episode.
He's just like, I want a sweet treat.
Like, if somebody's sick and like needs cough drops for their sore throat, let's give them the credit here to Sarah until we know otherwise. Don't just like take a cough drop from somebody because you're like,
I want one.
Right? It's not a Mentos.
It's not a Mentos. We go to Grissom examining the car. Nick and Sarah approach. They are sent to go check the perimeter. Warwick meets Greg Sanders. And he's like, did you just like roll out of bed? Like, what is this attire? You're disheveled. And this is like not appropriate.
He's wearing gear. Like the Criss Angel shirt is what I
he
feel
is,
like.
He's kind of wearing a Criss Angel shirt.
I don't know what that brand is. Guys used to wear this all the time.
I know exactly what, as soon as you said that, I was like, I know exactly what you mean.
It's got words on it. It's probably ruffled around the collar.
Yeah. And so this turns into an opportunity where Warwick gives Greg Sanders a lesson on like how to be prepared and how to like stock your gear and how to be, you know, all these sort of things.
Like, which, you're going to be serious about being a CSI.
Yeah, and Greg Sanders
was a really good, like, lesson. A really
yes,
good
it was. And it was respectful. Like, it wasn't demeaning. And Greg Sanders was like, well, no one told me. And Warwick was like, well, now someone did. So now you have this information. Do with it, you know, what you will. The next scene, we have Sarah popping another cough drop. So she lied to Nick about not having another one. She...
All right. I want to talk about this because we kind of glossed over this a second ago, but there's two components to this. One is, why is Sarah taking the cough drop? And I'm sure we'll get to that later.
We are definitely going to get to that.
Two, I interpreted this as a little like, she's not offering Nick a cough drop. She's bitter about the promotion.
Oh.
That's why she needs the cough drop, and we'll discuss that in a second.
Okay.
Brass talks about it.
Yeah.
But she said, like, she said something later about, like, not liking to, like, doesn't like to lose or remember.
Losing is still losing.
Yeah, losing is still losing. Yeah.
Losing is still losing.
That's a great name for this episode. I was like, I kind of keyed into the first time I watched the second time. I was like, oh, they're definitely trying to tell you this story, which is that the reason she won't give to Nick is she's bitter about him being promoted over her, which they haven't told you has happened. But no. I think you can assume based on the little email that Kristen was writing at the end of a couple episodes ago.
Yeah, that was like two episodes ago, maybe.
Where he was promoting, where he was basically putting in for Nick's promotion over her. And it is, I think the idea is that, you know, she, her job is her life, right? Yeah. And so to lose out on that, she's taking it kind of personally. I don't know the full scope of where this derailment is going. I see she's also still probably struggling from the Grissom reveal in the interrogation room. Yeah. Yep. And so you have like these weird feelings compiling on each other, and it's not unreasonable to think about what somebody might do in that situation. But I sort of keyed in this notion that I think she's being particularly salty towards Nick as a result.
Okay.
And I don't know if that was intentional, but that was my reading of the situation. So that's why I wanted to bring it up.
Very fair.
Did you think that at all? Or maybe you know better. Maybe I should.
Maybe I do. Maybe I know some things. Maybe I know that this is like not the only time this is going to come up.
Okay.
So I'll just leave it at that because I don't spoiler like to alert. Give things away too much. So she's in the side yard. She finds cigarettes and orange peels. Nick is pondering, like, how did they gain entry, right? This is a gated community. And this leads him to follow a single tracks from the side yard, like, back down to, like, the road. And it's a bike. Like, it's a bicycle. That's how they gain entrance. They use.
I also, like, they're on this, like, sidewall, right?
Yeah.
I could jump that fence. And honestly, I'm not the most physically fit person.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, they could have just jumped the fence to this gated community.
But I don't think, no, I think that's a different gate because we learn later that they knew the combination to get in the gate.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they explain how they get in later, but I was like, they make it sound like it's so impossible.
Yeah, like how could anyone have ever made gated community?
Yeah, this 6 foot tall steel fence could keep any criminal out.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, and there's an advantage. They have these bike tracks and the idea that they might be on bikes. Obviously, you can get to and from the house. They don't talk about how big it is, but obviously.
No, they don't. Yeah.
You know, you got to drive. You have to go some distance, but like, early in the morning, maybe you could just sneak in under the cover of darkness and you manage to sneak out in time. I mean, it, yeah. So it's like, I was like, they're making such a big deal about this gate. I could jump that fence.
You're like, I could make this happen. We'll come back to the gate. We're with Catherine and Greg Sanders. They're in the house. They're going upstairs. Catherine instructs Greg Sanders to check the carpet for trace. Catherine finds an empty jewelry box. Greg Sanders finds blood at the end of the bed on the floor and also finds porn videos, VHS style, featuring the wife.
Yes. I do like how Greg Sanders finds blood and then it's me like, oh, this is interesting. Let me see what's also in this box.
Yeah, what's also in this box? VHS pornos.
And then he finds basically the most likely thing to be hidden in a box under your bed.
Yeah, a box of VHS porno tapes. And this brings us to Grissom with Doc Robbins. Doc Robbins is just going on about how much work the wife has had done. And Grissom's like, I don't care. Like, what does this matter that she's had work done? Does that play into this case at all? No, it doesn't. Can we get to the point where like, and I was like, thank you, Grissom. I'm proud of you for like, why are we harping on like the cosmetic work this woman has had done? So instead, we learn that she suffered two gunshots, either which could have been fatal. So they're not, at this point, at least they're not entirely sure which one was fatal. Both could be. She also has stun gun burns, which plays a major role in this episode, is stun gun usage. So then we have a Warwick and Nick outside walk and talk. A rare outside walk and talk. They are at the keypad for the community, and this is where they realize that the people who gained access had the code, because they were able to do a test to see sugar residue, and then the sugar residue were on the buttons that correspond to the code. And
I think they're basically saying, like, listen, they probably watched people put the code in.
Yeah, yeah.
And then that's how they got the code. But they were over there eating oranges, waiting for someone,
yeah.
To have, and that sugar from the oranges got on their fingers and then was left on the pad.
Yeah. Yeah. And
there's something Sarah also collects the cigarette butts of the scene here.
She does, yep.
This is the weirdest piece of evidence. They never really explain how these get here.
Yeah, they do.
Well, they explain where they come from.
They explain where they come from.
But they don't,
expose
why they're there. Like, it's like, I feel like they cut a scene out.
Yeah, they could have definitely cut a scene out. There definitely could have been a further explanation
this. They don't, confront at the end being like, oh, you tried to plant evidence.
Yeah. You're right. They definitely could have
cut it. They spent a lot of time on it throughout the course of the investigation, this part of the episode, to then just, I feel like at the end, I was like, wait, whatever happened? Before I watched it, I was like, wait, yeah, they never really got back to
it. Yeah, they were like, we never really circled back on that. They don't. We will talk about it a bit more, but yeah, we never get a really definitive answer for it. Instead, we have Grissom and Catherine talking about her evaluation. Catherine uses this time to explain that she wants a personal life. And she hasn't had sex in 7 months. So
6 months. Wait, no, 7 months.
Oh, wait, 7 months. And Grissom has a very good boss moment here where he's like, hey, the job of any manager is to train someone to eventually replace them. And so this is Catherine's like, oh, do you think I could do that? And he's like, I think so, possibly, blah, blah, blah. Catherine, feeling guilty that he didn't put on record that he didn't put a mark against her on her evaluation for using the lab to confirm her paternity, prompts Catherine to tell him about the check from Sam Braun and the fact that she cashed it.
Which we didn't really know what had happened. It wasn't that much money, though. She makes it sound like it's way more money than I remember it being $100,000.
But again,
millions.
This is 20. She said it's enough for them to do
whatever they want.
Whatever they want. But not enough to do nothing. Meaning, I can't just quit my job.
Right. I guess to
go away to an island.
$1 million, but not $10 million. I guess.
Yeah,
is what I was thinking. But I was like, it's $100,000. That's not enough to pay off your house for a lot of people.
I mean,
even in 2004.
I don't know, Arizona in 2004, maybe.
Maybe, yeah.
If she already paid some of it off.
But that would be all of it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's not enough to put Lindsay through college, barely in 2004.
No, but
that's what I mean. If she made it sound more, so then I was like, oh, I don't know. I spent the time being did he come back with a bigger check? Do I not remember this?
No.
Misremembering how much the check was?
No. He did not come back.
It is a lot of money. Don't get me wrong.
It is a lot of money.
If you are financially stable, it is a lot of money because if you don't need that money.
Yeah, you can invest it and you can.
Yeah, it just improves your, it just 100% goes improving your life.
Yeah. Yeah. And Grissom's not happy about this, understandably. Because she's like, well, I checked with a lawyer. And he's like, look, legally, it's great. Legally, it's fine. But ethically, is it? Because he was a suspect in a murder case. And he gave you money. And what happens in the future if he gets into additional trouble? How are we going to handle this?
They did dismiss that case for basically the same reason, right?
Yeah, it did. So... doesn't look good. Well, we don't really come back. Well, we come back around to Catherine's personal life, not really the evaluation, a little bit later. Instead, we have Catherine entering a room where Sarah is investigating items from the wife. And she is annoyed at Catherine because Catherine comes in and just starts touching stuff. And Sarah's like, I have a system.
Yes.
Please. Which, as someone that can really get annoyed when people mess with my system, I can understand where Sarah's coming from. I have a way of doing things, yeah. And when people interrupt it, my brain does not enjoy that at all. And she wasn't mean about it. She just kind of was like, please, Catherine, I have a system.
I can even imagine Sarah or Catherine saying the same thing back to Sarah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, 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 yeah. It wasn't said with any hostility. And Sarah also lets her know in this exchange that she found a release form in Laurel's bag. So this brings Catherine to the happening club. She needs to see the boss.
The acid drop.
She needs to see the boss. We see the boss, and this is my first, and Nick's as well.
Yes.
But the so
it's been a long time for you to get this character's name.
Yes. We don't learn his name until much later in the episode. Yeah.
No, it's like the end of this like scene or at least the series of scenes where they're in this location together.
Yeah.
It's the very end of it. To leave, but it's like a long amount of time.
Yeah. So this is Nicholas Lay, and I know him as Alex Krycek from The X-Files. Because if you guys don't know, one of my dog's names is Scully, named after Dana Scully from The X-Files.
I had a number of shows written down, but the two that I was going to call out was The Killing, which is this really... I should have looked up where this was from. I can't remember the name of the channel it was on, but it's one of the slowest moving shows I've ever watched. And the fact that I enjoyed it, AMC, that's what it is. I couldn't watch a second. I couldn't bring myself to watch an extra season of it because it was so slow. But you're probably there. And there's a weird sci-fi show called Continuum, which is like
I didn't watch it.
Like parallel universe. It's like Sliders meets Doctor Strange.
Oh, okay.
Or something. Or Groundhog Day, even. And that was a weird sci-fi show. And I think he's like a decent chunk of that, like 6 or 8 episodes of that show or something.
Okay.
But I didn't actually know where I knew him from. I saw it. I just like, this guy looks familiar.
Yeah, I knew exactly. I've seen The X-Files so many times that as soon as I saw him, I was like, and then
I was looking at the IMDb and I was like, oh, but I only have like 5 other shows on here, which are smaller parts, like 4 arcs. But this IMDb is wrought with like 4 or 5 episode arcs and like
a lot of shows for sure.
I can only imagine this actor probably filmed like 10 pilots and never got picked up because that's usually
what usually happens.
You're filming a pilot every year and it just doesn't get picked up. And then next year you film another one and it doesn't get picked up. And so you do 4 or 5 show guest appearances on. A lot of times these guys get signed to like deals with networks. And so they're on like a bunch like of network shows every year.
Yeah. Yeah. So we see, we'll learn, as Nick pointed out a little bit later, that his name is Chris Bezik.
Bezik? Yeah. That's the way we're done.
And he is instructing an all female staff. Like all of his servers are women.
Yeah, like bottle service.
Yeah,
waitresses. Yeah,
yeah. And he, Catherine approaches him. He brings Catherine to a private room to talk. He immediately is like, "Oh, is this about like Trent, about Mike and Laurel?" And he, you know, they sit down in this private room. They're talking, and he's saying, "You know, as terrible as this is, they would have wanted to go out together. Like they wouldn't have wanted to like live without." Each other, and so at least there's like that in all of this.
And he's like the first one to be like, she's no trophy wife, right?
Yes, he's like, no, he really loved her and she was really good for him. And yeah, I think he said, oh, is it this scene or is it later? Because there's several different people that say that they were like really good for one another. So this might have been the scene where he says that he got her out of porn and she made him a home.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure it was this scene. And so we learn that Chris runs his clubs, Mike Trent's clubs, since his like professional breakup with his past partner, Mr. Good. And Catherine's asking about Drake the snake, the one who is on the release form.
Drake,
and
he's like, no.
Yeah. And he's like, oh yeah, no, like he's harmless, he just like, you know, he wants to get into porn, whatever, like he I hired him. Like, you want to go talk to him? I'll bring you go down to talk to him right now.
Ron Jeremy reference is really
prevalent. Yes. I was like, oh, I was like, this is bringing me back. He's a pretty terrible person too. And then he asks for Catherine's name in a very come hither sort of deep gravelly voice sort of way. It's just kind of like, hey, I didn't get your name. And she, I don't know if it started in this scene. I think it did. She talks to him in like an octave that she doesn't talk to anybody else.
Oh, really? Yeah. I mean, and then next time they have a close moment, I noticed this, but like I didn't notice it in this one. Yeah.
And again, I don't know if it's this scene or if it's later on. But so Catherine's at the bar talking to Drake the Snake, and we
this
learn
is my spot the guest star.
Oh, this is not my miss spot the guest star.
Oh no! Ooh,
no! All right, Drake the Snake, let's go. Ooh.
So Drake Snow, played by Kim Coates, he's in almost every single episode of Sons of Anarchy. He is one of the major club members in Sons of Anarchy. His character's name is Tig in Sons of Anarchy.
Okay.
His facial hair has come a long way.
Okay, good for him.
He's one of those guys, I think he definitely looks better as he got older. Or handsomer, I guess is really the word I would say. He aged like a fine wine. But I was like, holy crap, I knew what this guy is. I couldn't remember his character's name. I had to write it down, but it's been a long time since I watched Sons of Anarchy.
I've never watched Sons of Anarchy. He's like
two or three dude in the entire show.
Okay, all right. Yeah. And now I'm looking, because you were the one that was like, oh, from his IMDb, I would probably know him from other things. And now I'm looking
for IMDb. I'm talking about the first spot, the guest star.
Oh, okay, then never mind. Okay.
Yeah, the X-Files. I assumed because he was in the X-Files, you would know who he was.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, no, this, I don't think he's in anything else I know of. I think that's the only thing I've seen. Although, there was a movie he's in called Goon, which has Stifler from American Pie in it, which people say is good. I've never watched it.
I've never seen it either.
It kind of came out like after my post Blockbuster days, but
he was in three episodes of Smallville, so I probably did see him in that, but I don't remember.
I don't remember from that. Yeah, he's in some insane number, 92 episodes of Sons of Anarchy.
Okay,
of which I've seen everyone.
Okay, so you're definitely.
Who was the business guy? Oh, I forget the actor's or the character's name, but he was in just a few episodes ago. But it's about the guest star for the Sons of Anarchy.
Yes, we did. Yeah, yeah. So he is explaining to Catherine that he just bypassed Mike altogether and went straight to Laurel to give the form to, because he was just like, Mike does not like me. And
this was for the location, right? They didn't really mention this.
This was for the location.
They made it sound like it was a release form for acting in a porno, but it really just was for the location.
It was so that they could use one of their clubs as a location to film a porn video in. We then have Warwick and Nick with a whole big grouping of abandoned bikes. And as they're examining the bikes, they find sugar on the handlebar of two of the bikes, similar to what they saw on the keypad. And Warwick knows a special trick, so he removes the seat of one of the bikes and pulls out the receipt of said bike, which leads them to a...
I want you to just take a moment, and I just want you to imagine getting in front of a jury and being like, yeah, we got 100 abandoned bikes from Las Vegas, and two of them, riders of these children's bikes
had sugar.
Sugar on the handlebars. And then imagine the field day the defense would happen. Oh, yeah. Children, widely known for never consuming candy.
Never.
Any kind while riding their bikes.
When literally the episode we had before this, the robbery went wrong because the child ate so much candy that he had five cavities.
Yes. So let's, I was like, wait, you're telling me you have that many? We're not talking, this is Las Vegas. It rains once a quarter.
It like almost never rains.
So if any kid had a sugar from like a month ago, it would be on the handlebars of that bike still.
Yep.
It's so dry. Nothing's evaporating. Nothing's dissolving. Nope. I was like, every single bike in there should have sugar on the handlebars.
Yep.
And I was like, all right, guys. I just gave it to him and was like, all right, let's move it along.
Yep. So this receipt brings Warwick and Grissom to talk to a Ross Davis, who is like, yeah, my bike got stolen. No, I didn't report my bike stolen. Like, what was that? Like, what was going to come from that?
I still don't get the receipt in the seat thing.
I don't either. I don't know.
At first I thought it was supposed to be like a receipt for like a, because Warwick has this history of being like a runner for a bookie.
Yeah.
I thought that's what it was. And then I was like, well, why would his name be on it? And then I realized, then watched it. I was like, no, it's like the receipt for the bike or a repair shop or something.
Yeah.
I was like, is this a thing that I've just never heard of?
It's not anything I've heard of.
I was like, it just does not sound like a thing anybody would do.
Yeah, I have not.
It was a crucial piece of evidence this episode.
Yes. And so Ross is telling them about how his bike was stolen by like two buff dudes and he got his ass handed to him. But come to find out, part of that was because he was hit with a stun gun. Like, don't blame yourself, Ross, for not putting up a better fight. You were hit with a stun gun.
Yes. Is Grissom notices it, right? Like the stun gun marks.
Yes. Well, because he's kind of like rubbing like the back of his neck and Grissom's kind of like, what's going on? And he's like, they hit me with something and like my knees went out. And that's when Grissom kind of looks and sees like the two prong mark from a stun gun on him.
The two huge dudes reference gave me real Boondock Saints feelings.
Oh, really?
It was a huge dude.
Huge dude. So we're then with Catherine and Greg Sanders. They're having their own walk and talk. There's a butt joke in there for reasons I don't quite understand. But we also learn in the scene that the blood that Greg Sanders found in the bedroom belongs to one Drake the Snake. And that three out of the four cigarettes collected at the scene also have Drake's DNA on them. And then one of them belongs to an unknown female. So this brings us to Jim Brass with Drake in interrogation. He admits to being in the bedroom. And Jim Brass is like trying to get him to admit that he was having sex with Laurel. And he's like, I did in the past when we filmed porn together.
Yes.
Not now. We like did not have sex. Yeah, like we did not have sex. And then Jim Brass is like, well, like we got your cigarettes at the scene. And he was like, and I will say, well acted. So I'm not surprised that he went on to like have a pretty serious role. Because this was, you could see the shift in his face where he's like, what?
What are you talking
about? Like, what are you? And not like the what? Like a legitimate, like, I can't comprehend what you're saying to me because this doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, real befuddlement.
Yeah. And so Drake is like, look, I smoke at one place. It is at work. I'm down to once a day. Like, that is it. That is like all. There's no way that like I would have like flung cigarettes out at their house. So this brings Catherine back to the club and she's there with Chris and she's being all flirty and talking in a higher octave and yada yada. And then they kiss Catherine.
Oh, sort of.
They do a little lip.
Very teasy.
Little teasy lippy. Catherine.
I know. Right after this whole, like, I left this inappropriate thing out of your promotion or your year-end review, let's not just do the most unprofessional thing possible and make out someone who you may have kind of ruled him out, but could still turn out to be the murderer.
Okay. Yes. That's, especially the first time I watched this, all I could think of was, you guys are suspicious of everyone all the time. And somehow, this guy never suspected at all.
I think she never swabbed him or something, or
no, she DNA swabs Drake the Snake.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah,
she doesn't DNA swab him. They just immediately are like, well, you're handsome, so you couldn't have been involved in this.
Even that, that doesn't mean make him innocent, right?
I know,
it just means you don't have innocence.
So we then have and Catherine's there to collect sand from the spot where Drake the Snake claims that he like puts out his cigarette overnight.
So this is like the third time we've come back to these cigarettes, right?
Yeah.
And like, we're going to find out about this in a second. Right? They're like, they start to think that somebody took the cigarettes from this location and planted them there.
Yeah.
They never play out whose idea it was, why they did it. If they were, we can only presume they were ever trying to set Drake up somehow.
Yeah.
Which is itself like a whole level of crazy, because you could have just like not left evidence behind. But if you knew you were trying to plant evidence, why would you leave your own evidence behind? Like, it's so bizarre.
Yeah, I guess we'll talk about it a bit more. So we're then with Tara. She's sipping some coffee. And Jim Brass asks how she's feeling. And this leads him to kind of go on a being vulnerable. I was like, thank you, Jim Brass.
How you feeling?
Hey, what do you mean?
Well, you were popping cough drops at the scene the other day in Model Minutes.
I thought I was coming down with a cold.
Yeah, I understand colds. You know, back in Jersey when I was getting from both ends, from my wife and my work, things started to get heavy. And I started medicating. Cure my cold.
Jabras is like, hey, I have self-medicated in my day. And just to let you know, like, more problems than answers in that. And in this exchange, Sarah admits to saying she had like a couple of beers with breakfast. And Jabras is like, just a couple? And she was like, yep. And he was like, okay.
I hope not too much more than a couple, because you drove to the crime scene.
So he's just kind of like, I'm here for you. Just, you know. So then presumably Jim Brass leaves this exchange, goes into Grissom's office. And Grissom is looking at pictures of the couple's missing jewelry. And Grissom again brings up, like, why would they drag the body down the driveway? Like, this doesn't make any sense. Why would they do this? And this is like a point that he just like keeps coming back to. He's like, this doesn't make any sense. We then have Hodges with Catherine. This is where we learn that the sand from acid drop matches the sand that were on the cigarettes found at the scene. And so it does appear that the cigarettes were planted, which explains why there's just like this random unknown female. Cause they were like, why, who's this like random unknown female? And they were like, oh yeah, someone else happened to like also put their cigarette out in the same spot and just got collected into the same thing.
Clue that they were trying to get Drake's cigarettes.
Yes.
Somebody knew that he smoked and put a cigarette there every day.
Yeah. Yeah.
Somebody tried to get a bunch of them and plant them.
Yep. At the scene.
At this one weird location off to the side.
Yeah.
Near the gate, not like by the house, not anywhere else.
Yeah.
And then simultaneously sat there and ate oranges off of the tree while they like didn't try to hide their own personal evidence.
Yeah.
But like, who got them the cigarettes? How did they get them?
So I will.
Them? When did they plant them? They don't answer any of that.
They don't answer that. I will point out that in one of the scenes where Catherine is talking to Chris, she mentions Mr. Good.
Yeah.
And he does say that he still makes appearances at the club.
Yes. Oh, that.
So, that could, like, yeah. That has been established. Like, I'm not saying it's a good.
Yeah.
It wraps it all together. But I will say that they do sort of explain how he would have known about the cigarette.
There's always evidence in every real case where, like, they don't get the right information to make every bridge, right? To button it up really nice.
Yeah.
The amount of time they spend on this in this episode for a television show, like, how long would it take you just to be like, even in the interrogation scene, it would be like, we think that you took the cigarettes from the club, right? You know, they just don't even mention it again. It just like literally falls off the radar. And then it's like, why is that? I don't know. It's like the one piece of evidence on a second watch through, I was like, wait, they spend so much time on this. This never comes up.
Yeah,
like,
it never comes
to a conclusion.
Yeah.
And so, yeah.
Yeah. So this brings us to Jim Brass approaching Kyle Good and his son at an arcade. And this is my missed spot. The guest star is Kyle Good, who is a 1DB Sweeney. He's in quite a few things that I have seen. What I feel like I should remember him for, but I don't, is Criminal Minds. He's in 3 episodes of Criminal Minds. And I have seen all of Criminal Minds, so I should remember him. I just didn't. It didn't immediately ring bells for me. So this is my miss spot the guest star.
D.B. Sweeney. Huh?
Mm-hmm. Pretty cool name. We've had some pretty cool named spot the guest stars. So he is just, he's not surprised that Jim Brass wants to talk to him. He's like, I'd like me for it. Like, I'm his jaded ex-business partner. And then he has his son, Alex, give his alibi, which is that his dad like spent the morning with him and drove him to his grandma's house, so like there's no way he could have been involved. And they leave, but before they leave, Kyle puts a cigarette out and Jim Brass pulls a little fast one and collects that cigarette after he leaves.
I will say, this is like a mind game for me, because the notion that you could be in an arcade for children.
I know, and just smoking and putting it out on the game.
It feels like we're living in a parallel universe.
It's very weird. It's very weird.
And I'm not, I have to tell myself, I don't even know. That might still be a thing.
I have no idea. I haven't been to an arcade in Vegas.
I just
the like few times I've been to Vegas.
Don't have any real laws against smoking.
Yeah.
Public places. So.
Yeah. So this brings us to Nick at Sunnyside's, because Kyle had mentioned it when Jim Brass was talking to him. And this is my second and Nick's third spot. The guest star.
It's your third. Well, I guess you're because you missed one.
So it's my second one. This is Kat Dennings.
Yep.
And I know her from. How is that not what she's known for?
Two Broke Girls.
Yes. How is that
why
not?
Why is it not on her IMDb? I don't know.
What?
I feel like I knew her from that before I know her from the other thing that I know her from, which is Marvel movies. But
that is so weird. How is yes. Two Broke Girls not?
It's been 10 days since I've looked this up, and I still remember being like, wait, what? Am I thinking of a different person who's in Two Broke Girls? I thought it was Kat Dennings. But she's not. It's not on her list of things you know her from.
That is so weird.
What is she's? How many episodes of Two Broke Girls is she?
138.
Yeah. That's a lot of episodes of anything.
Like, she's one of the main characters.
She's one of two main characters. She's one of Two Broke Girls. Also, like, if you look at her IMDb, she's in, like, 10 things having to do with Two Broke Girls because she's basically one of the main characters in the show. And so she's associated with it up, down, left, right, and center.
That's so weird. I also do know her from...
40-year-old version, and I cannot tell you who she plays.
I could not tell you who she plays. I also know her from WandaVision because I did watch all of WandaVision.
Yeah, she's in Thor. So she's one of the main, like, the old school Thor. She's like the original Thor.
She's the
friend of Natalie Portman.
Oh, okay.
But a newer show she's in, The Sandman, which is, if you've never seen, just kind of a cool thing.
Yeah, I haven't seen it.
She's not in The Sandman. This is a podcast. Oh, I said that, I was like, wait, who is she in The Sandman? She's in the podcast, The Sandman. Oh, she plays Death. The Sandman is, there's like, I don't even really, I can tell you what the main character looks like. I don't remember everyone who's in the show.
Yeah, yeah.
There was like an HBO show version or something like that of The Sandman recently. Which, similar time frame, so oddly doing that, but yeah, no. She's in all Thor movies,
okay.
She was in WandaVision.
Yeah.
I'm surprised she's not in more things, because in my mind, she's like becoming a big actress, but she's done it a lot, and her IMDb has nothing for up.
She's in Shifting Gears, which is a new TV show.
Yeah.
I think it has Tim Allen, so I'm not watching it.
Oh, it's Tim the Tool Man, the third take for her?
I don't know. I've just seen some like previews for it.
It's got Sean William Scott in it. Not that I'm trying to convince anybody to go watch the show. The spot the guest stars in this show is
on point.
Yeah. There's a lot. Jenna Elfman from Greg and Dharma.
Yeah.
Greg and Dharma, Dharma and Greg.
Dharma and Greg.
That's the name of that show.
Yeah. So Nick is talking to her, and she does remember Mr. Good because he was really gross and hit on her in front of his son. In the drive-thru and was very inappropriate. And
I couldn't help but wonder if this was part of his.
It was.
If this was like intentional. Like
it was.
Intentionally. I thought for a moment she was going to be in on it.
Oh, no, no, no. He was intentional with it so that she would remember him.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And so.
Well, I almost got to a point where I was like, first I thought she was in on it. But then I got to a point where I was like, maybe he's just that sketchy all the time.
No, he was doing it.
Or that he knew he was going to be on camera.
Yeah.
But because he was such a sleazebag, she also remembered him.
Yes.
So like, I couldn't figure out if that part was intentional or not. It's easy to imagine it was, but that also means I have to give this guy a lot of credit, which I don't want to do.
Which you're like, I don't want to do. We do learn that there is a camera on that window. So we then have Nick and Grissom reviewing the footage, and they're trying to figure out what is around the kid's neck. I hate the scene. I especially hate the scene on the second watch through, because we don't learn what it is in this scene.
Yeah.
Because Nick is like, is it a canteen? And Grissom's like, no, you put a canteen to your mouth, not to your eyes. And Nick's like, I guess I'm going to have to
pull some.
I'm going to have to do some really hard investigative work to figure out what this is.
It's binoculars.
It's binoculars.
Yes. Also, I don't know if you know how tapes work. Binoculars. But pausing is a still.
Yes, it is. So we then have Chimbraz, Grissom, and David at another crime scene with a male victim. Stun gun is involved again.
Yeah, this guy's been stunned. It's a serial killer out there.
Yep. Grissom picks his pocket. He finds a necklace with the MT initials on it. And he's like, this guy doesn't look like Mike Trent. And Then Grissom goes outside. He's following a blood trail, which leads him to a second body. This second body has a pillowcase full of jewelry and two bricks of $10,000. Yep. And this is where they're like, oh, these were hitmen for hire. Like,
yeah.
This was a hired hit. So we have Grissom back with Doc Robbins and the hitmen. So we learn how essentially they killed one another. Jim Brass and Catherine then have their own walk and talk. And this is where we learn that the jewelry was not part of the initial plan, because she was packing up the jewelry for them to go put it in the safe box because they were going on vacation together.
And you could, so call back that original like morning scene where they're like, yes, getting ready to leave. She has this like briefcase on like,
yep,
thing in front of her, which is presumably where the jewelry was.
Yep.
She's like making breakfast or whatever. Yep. I also want to say this whole, like these two guys who killed each other.
Yep.
Real Reservoir Dog feelings for these guys.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, we're going to split up. We got to split up the goods and we just end up killing each other.
Just end up killing each other instead.
Oh, Lord, if you've never seen Reservoir Dogs.
I mean, it's an old enough movie. You should be good.
Anything over 20 years old is
free. Yeah, so it's free pass. So we then have Sarah and Warwick. They're documenting each of the bills. This is where a conversation pops up between them, because Warwick is saying, oh, the casinos have it figured out, right? Like, instead of losing this entire stack of bills and then having to count each bill to like see, do you have everything? You just lose a chip. Right. And so like, isn't it better to lose like a chip than it is? And a
stack of hundreds.
Yeah. And Sarah's like, to me, losing is losing. Like, regardless, losing is losing. But as she's going through and she's examining the bills, she finds one that has a blood stain on it. So she brings it to Greg Sanders, who...
Isn't surprising considering the guy was bleeding a blood trail the whole way up.
True, but...
But it does turn out to be a lot more important.
Yeah. So Sarah brings it to Greg Sanders. He, at first, doesn't want to deface federal property. And Sarah's like, it is part of a crime.
First off, that's not a real thing.
She's like, you can deface it. Yeah, she was like, analyze it. Like, we need to analyze this bloodstain. So then Nick is with Kristen again. This is where we learn that the canteen is in fact binoculars. Very fancy binoculars, we'll find out in a little while. But before then, Grissom and Nick are back at the house. They walk to where like Mike's bloodstain is in the driveway. And this is where Grissom is like starting to like have one of his like light bulb above the head moments here. So he like goes up onto the road. He instructs Nick to... So when he first goes up there, Nick is standing where they found the body. And Grissom can see him with his binoculars very clearly. But can see him any without the binoculars.
Has binoculars, which totally makes sense. Like,
yeah.
I 100% believe that, but it's also kind of fun.
Yeah. And so then he tells Nick, like, hey, go back to where he was shot, like where he was killed. And so Nick goes back. Grissom can't see him anymore. And as Grissom's up on this little like area, he also finds car paint scraping against the barricade there. So he calls Jim Brass and is like, hey, get a warrant for Mr. Good's car.
They don't really talk about that again, but really think of this, but like that's also kind of one of those you just assume that it matches.
Yes. Yeah, they don't really, that's another one that they don't really firm up. Instead, we have Jim Brass and Grissom with Mr. Good and his lawyer, and we learn that not only is he in legal battles with his ex-business partner, or was in legal battles with his ex-business partner, he's also in legal battles with his ex-wife. And his ex-wife gave the investigators permission to take a hair sample from little old Alex. Guess what Alex had in his system? Ambien.
This is cool. I wish they had done something to set this up more, even if it was just an internal conversation between like Jim Brass and Grissom or something.
Yeah, because they do mention a few times that the son was sleeping, but even the lawyer is like, okay, so the kid slept on his way to grandma's house. Like, that's not weird. Like, how do you want to... Yeah.
Like, you know, even if it's like, you remember Brass be like, yeah, I spoke to him, this kid, he had an alibi. Kid say slept the whole way. When was the last time you knew a kid who could sleep through a 3-hour car ride?
Yeah.
You know, at that age or something. Yeah, that age. You know, it's like, or, you know, just like a little dad moment or something, which would have been a great moment for his character, but also would have been like we think that something else is up here.
Yeah.
And that's why maybe we asked the wife for a hair.
Yeah.
Like just that, just a little extra.
Just a little nougat.
Maybe one less, like 9 less seconds of Vegas scenes, and we could have just had.
Yeah. Had that little nugget. We also learn in this exchange that it's the paper cut that gave him away because it's his blood that's on the dollar bill. And why would your blood be on the dollar bill that the hitmen have?
A thick stack of hundreds and a 10 grand wad. Yeah.
Yep. And this is where we learn, because he does go on a rant about how much he hates Mike. He says, like, oh, I didn't kill him. But he goes on this, like, he's a terrible human being. And there's a bunch of other people that would want to kill him. And I don't mind that he's rotting away. Like, he just, like, goes on this whole rant. And Grissom is like, you didn't want to kill him just for legal dispute purposes. Like, you wanted him to suffer. Like, you wanted him to feel pain. This was personal. And this is where I don't know if they say it or they just show it. I can't quite remember. But we see the flashback wherein Mike was forced to watch Laurel be killed. So he was stunned.
Maybe this is where my confusion comes from. They show him watching her die. And they show them killing him.
Yes.
And I think, and then they also show the guy on the hill with the binoculars. And I think I just stitched those three together.
Yeah.
He was already at the bottom of the hill, but I think the idea is they killed him and then they dragged him
down. And then they dragged him down and then he could see them. Yeah. And so that's the end of the story. We do have one more scene, though. Grissom's in his office. Catherine's leaving. And she's like, hey, are we going to be good after what we assume is related to the check conversation earlier? And he's like, well, you know, we'll be fine. We'll get there. And Catherine has to leave because she has some unfinished business to attend to.
It's a shame she didn't go, good, I'm going to go continue making out with one of the suspects from our last case.
Yeah, like if we're going to like let things pass, here's another thing that I'm going to need you to let pass here is that I almost made out with potential suspect in this case. Yeah. But good thing it wasn't him, so it doesn't matter.
At the start of this episode, I did not pick Catherine for having the most self-destructive behavior.
And that is the end of the episode. So, Nick, what did you think about today's episode?
I had a long time to reflect on this episode.
Yes, you did.
I am very bothered, clearly, by some of the what I feel like evidence left on the table.
Yeah.
Loose threads. But as I thought about it more and more, there's a lot of personal character development for a lot of different characters in this episode. Yep. The storyline is just fine. It is pretty good. It's a one-liner, the one storyliner.
Yep.
So, which wasn't great. So I ended up at a watch and a 3.5.
Okay.
Up from a 3. I think if my gut rating was a 3, but when I thought about it, I was like, we have had some dearths in scores for a couple episodes for me.
Yes.
I need to give more credence to the sheer amount of character development that took place in this episode. And that's probably a big reason why there's only one storyline. We have Greg getting more and more into learning things. We have Catherine in her personal life.
Yeah.
We have, I'm literally having a mind blank, Sarah.
And Sarah, yes.
Her struggling with both what maybe she heard from Grissom, but also her position potentially.
Yeah.
We have a kind of a cool, I mean, it's really in the context of Greg, but like, Warwick talking about, like, I don't know. Warwick's character is like in and out of the show, I feel like, some of the times where they like focus on him and then don't focus on him.
Yeah. But I agree 100%.
He comes from a background of like having to like make a name, like get out of a bad situation and become a normal adult. And like he's got his stuff together. And for him to talk about why, like these things that he's doing and how serious he takes his job and, you know, trying to instill it in somebody else, like being a mentor, like those are all cool things for his character to talk about. And so that was really good too. Real missed opportunity to have a couple of brass dad moments with, as I mentioned before, but overall, I don't know that we've had this much character development, like range of character development.
Yeah. Like not just like a single character.
So I had to think about like giving credit for that. And I was like, what more do I want? Right. This is a perfectly good episode. So I went up to 3.5. But I will say the second watch through wasn't helpful. So I just gave it a normal watch. Like, I feel like the one watch is good.
Yeah.
You don't really need to go back and rewatch this. There's not a lot of like Easter eggs. There was like one or two things.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think I'm going to land at a three out of five for much the same as you. Like, there's a lot of character development, which I like. It was fairly well spread out amongst the team, which I enjoy. Now I'm talking about it, I'm like, do I want to go up? Because now I'm like, oh, and then there was like good callbacks. Like,
it's hard remember to give credit for those things.
Yeah.
Right?
I'm like, because then they did I knew that the check was going to come up, but I didn't remember it was like this episode specifically. And I was like, oh, I'm glad that we like circled back around to the check and like what happened there. And they didn't just like let that fall by the wayside.
And we forgot to mention, when Catherine first goes to the club and she's like, hey, I need to meet your boss. That's Anthony E. Zeiker.
Anthony Z. Zeiker.
He's our creator is in this episode, not really worth points, but it's worth mentioning.
It is definitely worth mentioning.
I don't know why that reminded me of this moment, but it was just the little things. I guess I was thinking about how you got to make room for all the little things in the episode.
Yeah.
Eat up time over the course of the whole episode.
Yeah. And then like the guest star, like all the like supporting actors. Great.
Yeah.
You know, like they're, like everyone, I was like, oh, I was like, I can understand why a lot of these people went on to like do some pretty big, you know, pretty big things, because
there was a moment where I thought Laurel Trent was played by Topanga.
Oh.
A fraction of a second, but still.
You're like, wait a second.
I was thinking like those actors didn't have that much to act for in this episode because they weren't in it for very long, but everybody else is pretty good.
Yeah, I think so as well. And you know, but yeah, it was like one story episodes, which again, generally not my favorite. And like the story itself, meh, like it wasn't bad. But yeah. I do think, like, as you pointed out, there was definitely like some moments where I was like I put down in my notes. We touched upon it, but I made more of a deal of it when I was going through my notes of like, why was Chris never a suspect? Why did we just immediately be like, nope, this guy's legit. No concerns here. He's good. Yeah, like we're not gonna do anything. We're just gonna be like, oh, all right, yeah, no, it's cool. Like he has nothing to gain here. It's all
one. It's almost weirder to have these missing threads in a one storyline show.
Yes, I think they're more obvious on a one storyline.
Yeah, show. It's like you're not making time for another thing. So if you were out of time, just introduce one less piece of nonsense.
Just one less piece of nonsense. But it's a good watch. Again, yeah, like the rewatch, meh, it's fine. Like it's not a bad rewatch, but like you don't.
Yeah,
I feel like more things annoy you in the rewatch than they do if you just watch it once. Like it doesn't bother you as much the first time because you're like you don't connect it as much. It's fine. 3 out of 5. And we'll see how we rate next week's episode when we return to review season 4, episode 16, Getting Off.
Oh my.
Oh my.
I love that sometimes when you like say the name of the next episode, it's literally the first time I've heard it. So it's like, oh wow.
Yep. Yep. And so that's what we'll come back to review. So well, otherwise we'll
be getting off next week.
Getting off next week.
That'll help the search algorithm.
But otherwise, we'll talk to you then.
No spoilers.
No spoilers.